Accession number 10165, reel number 7.
Martin McLean, reel 7. We were talking about training. You were going through the situation about the gymnasium.
The gymnasium was shared by the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers and the Durham Light Infantry. So you'll have three or four squads of Royal Northumberland Fusiliers, and I know that we had three squads, so each in turn had to have the gymnasium for about an hour. The barracks is a huge, tall, three-storey building, a long building. Half of it was shared by the Fusiliers and half by the Durhams. And as I said, we had to share the gymnasium also. So that meant you had staggered times for your PT. You couldn't all go in at the same time, so the classes were staggered. You may be the first one day, the last the next day, and so on in that manner until everybody had the chance of going through the gymnasium. And they used to accept the gymnasium work as a very intricate part of your training to make you agile and fit. We do our afternoon training in accordance to the syllabus. As I say, it was jogged around so that you filled in the morning and the afternoon. And come evening, about 4 o'clock, was the end, not the end of your day, it was the end of training day officially, when the sergeant instructor used to go off home, and so did the officers. Officers used to close down. But then we had our tea meal, and then from there on, it was what they call interior economy.
What was your tea, usually?
That was very simple. Jam and bread with margarine, like axle grease. By axle grease, I mean it tasted like axle grease. Might have three slices of bread per table, three loaves of bread a table, which would run about 2 and a bit slices of bread, which everybody slapped on jam and margarine, or margarine and jam, and ate them. And you might get a bit of cheese. You might get some sardines. You might get some tinned fish, tinned herring, of that nature. But it was a very meagre meal, very meagre indeed, but just enough to fill in a corner. And having had your meal, the orderlies used to have to take all the stuff, the leftovers, off the table, which was none, really. You didn't have to take any plates or dishes back because the men took them back themselves. But you had to ensure that the table that you had been working on had no food left on it, cleaned up a bit, and leave it at that, because they had some dining-room orderlies who used to come along and sweep the place up. Servicemen, soldiers, that was their job. Old soldiers, whose their job was dining-room orderlies, and they used to sweep up and clean up after you. We'd go across the barrack room then for what termed as interior economy. You might have a half an hour rest or an hour rest where you could sort through your kit and just have a check through it, and then come cleaning of the barrack room. It was a lot of pride was taken in the barrack room. We had the 6 foot table and we weren't even allowed to use it. It was scrubbed clean every day. It was lily white, and the corners of it was metal plates, and the metal plates with a big bolt through the middle were taken out, and these pieces of metal were burnished. Now, a burnish is like a piece of chain mail that you see the knights of old wore and the hussars wear on their shoulders. It's like linked chain, and we used to buy these to polish both our bayonets and the corner ends of the table. And we all had a different duty. I might be on the table 1 week. I might be on the floor the next. I might be on the ablutions another time. I might be on the toilets another time. In other words, there was a roster put up, and you were responsible on that roster for maintaining the hygiene and the high standard of cleanliness of them utensils and equipment and the barrack room in this period of interior economy. At the same time, in the morning, you were responsible to ensure that them things were put up clean and neat and smart and laid out in uniform manner for the inspection of a morning. Then, after having done this, would follow, as I mentioned laboriously before, the Shiner parades.
Yeah.
Then come 9:30, they used to let you knock off altogether, put your kit away. And then you could make your bed down to sleep in. And then lights out, you could go to bed and sleep. I had a funny incident once during my training, after sleeping out. I was all the young lads out of the count. worn out with all the running up and down these three-story stairs. Everything was done at the double. Move, move, run. We had run up and down stairs for our meals, for training, for classes, for PT. We were fit as fiddles, and when we went to bed, we really slept. Once I was sleeping in my barrack room, Salamanca squad, and I saw a torch shining in the barrack room. I woke somehow, and I saw a torch shining in the barrack room, and I looked out my bed, and I looked out from under my blankets, because we used to snuggle in. It was so cold. There's no heating in the barrack rooms. It was you had coal for a fire. Only now and again, when there was snows on the ground, did you put your fires on, a real hoar frost. You didn't use your fireplace because for inspection each day. You couldn't use the coal boxes, the coal tubs, because that was for inspection every day. The coal you got just went in the big coal tub, and the corporal would allow you to put the fire on only on occasions, but you didn't have fires on, so we snuggled into our beds for warmth with our heads, you could see, more or less under blankets. And I saw this torch shining and looked up, and I saw two men wandering around the barrack room. And I went over to where the Lance Corporal, a fellow called Norris, had his bed. He slept in the barrack room the same as the men, but they had more leniency than us. They were accepted as part of a trained soldier. They had civilians. They had their smart outfit of khaki greatcoats and everything done, pleated up, and equipment hung up, stuck up behind the bed. And they also had covered up with a shirt or an old shirt their civilian clothing. Or they had them in a case under the bed. That was their entitlement, being a trained soldier, having had over 2 years service in. Now I saw these two men go over to this bed and start mooching about, shining the torch on. The corporal was in bed too. And then they passed me, and I noticed that they had brown leather belts on. And that was that. I just went to sleep. I thought it was our red caps. No, red caps. We had some military police who were stationed at the guard room, and they were tall fellas, real policeman type of people. And they wore these leather belts, and I just assumed that's how they were doing a check around the barrack room. Having been with the TA, I know we used to get people going around checking around barrack rooms, see everything was all right. So then next morning, woke Ravalli. The corporal found all his clothing had been stolen. And so did other Lance corporals and corporals who lived in the barrack rooms, found their kit had been stolen. So there was a hue and cry about it. We were carrying on with training as normal, under a very disgruntled NCOs. And then we were asked by the sergeant, did anybody by chance see anything happen in the barrack room last night? And they told us about Corporal Norris losing his clothing. So I spoke out. I said, well, I saw two men wandering around the barrack room with a flashlight on, but I didn't raise any hue or cry because I really thought they were just the military police from the barrack gates, just checking to see that everything was all right. And so from there on followed a spate of inquiries to me, and down came the military police, and they questioned me about these two people, and I told them that I could see just the reflections with this torch. I said, all I know is they had leather belts on and they had white lanyards on here. They used to carry them on their shoulders. And I said, right, good. The military police caught these men. There were two men from the Royal Artillery who were stationed in an adjoining barracks to us, who raided the DLI barracks and stole their civilians, and they'd taken them across the wall out of barracks and were starting to flog them. But they were caught. And I was greatly praised for this, but I thought it was just a bit of chance luck that they woke us, because I was so tired. I don't know how I woke yet. But anyway, that is that in part of the barrack room living.
Now that day that you just described doesn't have a lot of time for recreation in it, as far as I can see. Did you have any periods when you could sort of play games or relax?
Yes, we did. Wednesday afternoon was known as the sports day. Every afternoon, Wednesday, we stopped work at dinner time. No more work. The depot would be playing football or cricket, or we would be in the squad football. When you join the army, they ask you what sports you're interested in, and of course, I had my name down as a rugby player. The depot, DLI depot, had a rugby team, and so did the garrison. That included the Royal Artillery, REMC, the people that were stationed there. Everybody was stationed in Fenham Barracks, they had a garrison team, and the majority of them were officers. And the same, our depot had a team, and there were quite some good players among them. and I got me paying for them, and I was paying for them quite regular. But then the depot didn't play so often because they didn't have a good team, nor did they, in fact, a few years. And so I found that I was on a depot team, or as they call it, the garrison team. And then from there on, we used to play big matches out of the barracks against the bigger teams on Tyneside. And I used to like them, but you got no preferential treatments for getting off at rugby. See, instead of playing football, the lads had been on some sort of shiner parade to make up for anything that the NCO didn't think wrong or was right. When I came back from my rugby, I had to start on my shiner parade after all them lads was finished and keep up to date with everything that I was supposed to do by rights. Times you come back from rugby because it's a very hard game, you are just beat, but you still had to get on with it. And I played for the garrison the whole of the time I was at the barracks. And so our train went on that manner, day after day. And also, apart from Wednesday, we got Saturday afternoon off on Sunday.
What would you do then?
Well, I lived in Newcastle. For the first 2 months, you weren't allowed out of barracks. You weren't allowed out of barracks until you could dress yourself smartly. I'm saying two months. I could be wrong. Might have been a month. But you had to learn, as I say, you had these parades where you're taught how to dress properly. You had to be dressed properly. They give you a white belt, a walking out dress belt. And it had to be properly blankoed and cleaned and shined. And you had to be absolutely perfect. Now, as I said, in the offset, you got three suits. You got a canvas denim suit. Not denim, it was canvas suit, as we called it. Denim was never heard of them days. And then you got a part-worn outfit, and then you got a brand new outfit, which you went over to the tailors and had tailored. That was one thing I omitted to tell you. In our initial training, which is the elementary training that we receive, after we'd passed so many weeks at the training, we were all taken over to the tailors with our greatcoat. Now, the greatcoat is you all know what an army coat looks like. Well, an infantryman's coat, as with all the others, has big bagginess in the back, whereby it allows room for a man marching to put his greatcoat on and cover his pack, and it envelops the pack. It opens up, so it's a shabby piece of material. But the Durham Light Infantry had their own little peculiar method of dealing with them. They'd take all the greatcoats of the squad over, would march over to the regimental tailors. The regimental tailor would measure us all, and he'd make all the greatcoats the same length from the ground. He'd put box pleats in the back and iron them and press them and put a little sew the back pleats up so that when we had a greatcoat on, they were really a smart piece of uniform as compared to a shabby piece of equipment. And then in addition to getting our greatcoats done, we were then all fitted out at the same time at the tailor's with a superfine cap. All of the army them days wore a peak cap, which was the custom for to keep the sun out of your eyes when you were shooting or driving. Not that we were driving them days, but it was to keep the sun out of your eyes when shooting. And the issue ones were very hairy indeed. They were like a teddy bear. We used to call them the teddy bear hats. But the Durhams had their own system. They brought every man that became a regular had to have his own super fine hat, which was really a fine serge cap. And we used to look after these caps as if they were gold. Mind, they weren't a free issue. We had to pay for them on weekly payments to the regimental tailor. But every man had to have these hats.
You were saying you got out on a Saturday?
We were allowed out on a Saturday and a Sunday. Now, this was another difficult thing. We laugh at these things, but it was all part of training to ensure that nobody walked out of the depot and in a heap, a bundle, as we used to call a man that was improperly dressed. You'd have to put your putties on properly. As I said, we weren't allowed civilians, not for 2 years. You had to wear your ammunition boots polished, your tunic jackets and your tunic trousers, serge trousers, and you had to wear putties. Now, the putties meant you wrapped your bottom parts of your legs in them, and then you had turnips down over. And we're all taught how to crease and press with trousers. In the main, we used to put them under our bed wet the creases with our, take a mouthful of water and run our mouth along the edges of the serge that we want creased. Lay them on a bed, under the mattresses, under the sheets where we're going, or the mattresses where we're lying on, and put a towel between them and lay on them, and in this manner, the heat of your body pressed the trousers, so that you had to be, when you went out of the barracks, you had to be perfectly creased and dressed, and your white belt was had to be super. Now, nearly always, when we went to go out of barracks, they had people in the guard room, regimental police, they were either the fusiliers on when we went on, or when the fusiliers went out, the DLI NCOs were on. And they used to go through you like a fine-tooth comb, and the least little chance they got, they'd send you back to your barrack room to get cleaned up, as they call. And they wouldn't tell you what was wrong with you. You were untidily dressed. Go and get sort yourself up, lad. And these corporals used to make you stand to attention, double away from the guard room, and back you went. And so sometimes they just send you back so often. This is if a corporal had a bad liver on, and it used a bad temper, they'd just say, oh, please, I'm not going out. So you just got into your denims, and that was you. You could lay in bed then. You could go across the canteen. You could sit and talk with the lads around it, anywhere. Just sit around somebody's bed and sit and talk. But to get out of the barrack rooms is a trial indeed. But anyway, I used to go home to my parents and my brothers and relatives and aunts. I used to get out quite a bit and go and see the old rugby team playing, Wallsend. This time they wanted me to play, but we were forbidden to play for any team unless you had the command officer's permission. So I didn't play, but I used to go and watch them, Wallsend. And that's how we used to spend it. We church prayed. I can't remember doing church prayers at the depot.
What if you did stay in the barrack, what sort of, you say you just sat and talked, was that all you'd do, or were there other sort of games or amusements, or was there a library or anything provided?
They had a library, but it was very rarely used. The main talk was sitting around in beds, just talking about our own experiences, our life, getting to know one another. We could go across the sports field and borrow a football. The sports field was directly opposite the depot gates. You could go onto the sports field and punt a ball about, or kick a ball about, or cricket bats, and play cricket. You could fill in your time. There was the amenities there for you to have sport, and the library was there. But I can't remember many people taking advantage of the library. If a person was going to read up at all, he'd be reading up his regimental history for passing his examinations, or doing some writing letters home, or talking, or sitting on his bed, doing a little bit more polish up on his own.
Did you write home much?
No, well, I lived at home. I lived in Newcastle. I had no course to have to write home. I used to write to an aunt who was a nun, and that was about the lot.
You say they didn't have church parades. Did you go to any religious services?
I can't remember church parades as such at depot, because so many years ago, but I do know that I went to church. I was Roman Catholic, and we used to go at a little place for Mass ourselves. There was no such thing as praying, but when you went to church, you had to be properly dressed in serge and putties and boots. It was more or less an obligatory thing. You had to be properly turned out when you went to church, which I think was one of the big things that offset people having to go to church. I remember much later on when I joined the battalion, they'd have the band out playing first thing of a Sunday morning. They had a special tune they played.
We'll come to that, because it'll inevitably come up, that I think. Did many people, it sounds as if not many people went to...
No, there wasn't a great lot. More people went them days than there is today, I'd say. A Roman Catholic would keep up his religion. There was no perks or nothing to be gained by going, other than his own satisfaction going. And we used to go over to the corner of the barracks near the regimental tailors, where there was a little church, and we used to have a mass there and come back to the barrack room. And then you could go out if you wished. You could go out for a walk, you could get dressed and go out, or you could go and play sport again. I've even seen men on the square who are a bit backward in drill, practicing drill, during these few spare moments. Now, all this training that we had was working up for two important things. One was the company commander's passing out. In other words, it was long before the actual passing out parade, but it was a rehearsal for the passing out parade. And in this, you'd done every drill and every sort of thing, foot drill and That is foot drill without weapons, without your rifle, and with rifle. And them days the drill was quite a bit more complicated than it is today, because we used to march in fours, and we're forming too deep from fours, and marching, forming fours from too deep. Whilst on the march, we're forming company in our squadron line, changing direction, all these things. We had an awful lot of footwork to put into it to change from four deep into two deep to come back into line of a company or a platoon or whatever it may be. But it was interesting drill. Well, all this training that we're doing on the square entailed two passing out parades. One was the company commander's parade. First of all, he'd take you, you'd have a kit inspection by the company commander. Now, a kit inspection meant that every little bit of issue store that you had, every bit of equipment that you had, had to be laid on the bed for inspection. I can always remember how the method we had to lay part of them out was, for instance, I tell you, we had two pair of studded boots. We used to lay a pair of boots on the bed, upside down. The soles had to be polished, like the tops of the boots, and the studs had to be shiny. Now, we used to slide along the corridors and the roads outside just to get polish on our shoes. One could call it bull, as they do today. But we all done it without any qualms. It had to be done. And then we polished the leather around the studs and turned our boots upside down, and they were for inspection. And then in between that would place our mess tin. The mess tin is a thing, an oval-shaped, kidney-shaped thing, more or less, that we got for eating our food out of in the field. Every soldier was issued with them. And then on the sides of that, you'd be your 4x2 and your pull-through for cleaning your rifle. And then under another little bit of 4x2 would be your oil bottle. And then you'd have your shirt. And your shirt used to be absolutely squared off, showing your regimental number. Now, how we used to square them up, we used to buy from the Naffy kidboard sets of cardboard, and we'd draw our shirt tight and fit it in so that it was just a flat piece of khaki showing with your regimental number underneath, and the rest of the shirt folded under, like you see shop displays now. Everything's so neat and tidy, like the shirts you buy, but ours is done in a military fashion. And then you had three pair of socks, two pair of socks to be shown on the bed, again in little boards alongside. Now you may ask, well, how are you wearing a pair of socks and a pair are at the laundry? Well, every soldier bought a third or a fourth or fifth pair of socks, bought more socks, because there were things they were hard on, and they were pretty cheap. So from the quartermaster stores every now and again, we'd buy socks and things that we wanted on a kit day when we're allowed to go and do these things. They were just debited against you, and you paid for them gradually. So we had the shirt, a pair of socks on each side, one sock behind the other, about 3 inches, 4 inches square, with a towel in the middle, a GS towel as issued with your regimental number shown, again done in cardboard. So you had the shirt, the socks, and the towel all in one shaped area, absolutely perfectly balanced and in line and everything. And then behind that, you'd have your other odds and ends of things, your kid bag. You know, your kid bag was always in your locker. Winter underclothing and your underclothing all stacked up neatly behind. I forget exactly how that went now. And that your greatcoat would have to be folded behind the bed. Your equipment would have to be made up properly and all polished. Everything gleaming, bayonet gleaming, burnished and polished. And your rifle by the side of your bed in its rack, all polished, with your locker open, with your bed card at the back, showing your number, rank and name. And everybody's bed was exactly in line. There was lots of work by the men prior to this, polishing and cleaning floors. We'd start polishing floors, by the way, now, which we started from scratch, and we had beautiful floors. The issue was with a bumper. We used to bump this floor and then use the US blankets to polish the floor, and we started getting a nice shine on the floor, and it was much better than hand pegging it. Hand pegging is hand scrubbing, which was a back-breaking job, because you used to get spelks in your fingers and everything through the scrubber and the scrubbing brush. Making a better job with the polish. Anyway, your bed space, as they called it, had to be absolutely super. So the company commander would come along and inspect everybody's bed in detail. And if he found any faults, you are in trouble, because you'd let the squad down. Because if he found one or two at fault, then the whole squad got punished by the sergeants, in as much as they'd get more shine up praise through some dust or dirt or something untidy on your bed space. Because the training that we were getting on these interior economy and shine up raids taught us that we were perfect in laying kits. And anyone that did have these mistakes, well, it was either negligence or somebody had knocked it and it was out of place. But if you were punished, it meant the company commander had made a black mark against the squad, and that was a serious thing. Serious to us anyway. The company commander may just remark, that man's water bottle, the cork, it seems a bit rusted round there. Or the blanco on his water bottle is not looking very smart. He had a blanco, the little string to the cork of the water bottle. Little things like that, and then you'd be marked down for them, and you'd be given punishment later on for it. But if the squad was let down, it meant the company commander would order more inspections. You might order one next week at an inconvenient time to you, when it was a Saturday afternoon or something of that nature. So we used to try our best to keep the standard up. Now, after this inspection, everybody out in the square, with or without rifles, depends on the standard of training you've reached, and there you went through your drills as up to the stage that you had been taught by your sergeant for the company commander to witness the standard of drill that you had attained. And the men used to put their heart and souls into it, because once again, I say, Esprit de Corps was now really rampant among the men, and were so proud of our squad. Our squad was the best in the depot, was going to be the best in the depot. Everybody's putting the heart and soul in. You could hear the men muttering when they were getting a word of command to form fours from two. You'd all hear somebody saying, check, one, two, three. They were the check pace, and one, two, three, before we step off again. Always somebody calling the time, so that everybody was right on time. We used to have a caller out in the squad, which was, I think, unofficial, but there's always a call out, and he called out the time. And we'll pass out on this drill parade by the company commander. If we failed on that, oh, we're relegated. Now, to be relegated meant, instead of going back to the battalion at, they say, the end of February, you might be kept back to the end of March. And you'd get extra drill sessions the whole of the time. So, as it so happened, we never got relegated. We passed no bother at all. And then later on, getting on towards your training, when you're getting really up to the standard of a trained soldier, where everything is done snip-snap, with a real slap and a military style, you have a command officer's inspection. Again, kit inspection. Again, barrack room inspection. He didn't just used to go around the kits, he used to check everything in the barrack room to ensure that everything was in a soldier-like manner. And then out on the square, and the sergeant would drill the squad around the square. And all sorts of drills, that was laid down for the infantry. And after that, the command officer would either compliment you or give you a little bit rollicking about slackness of some nature, of some description. But as I say, our squad, the Salamanca squad, were really working as a man. I mean, by a man, it means that everybody was working together as a man, as one, and we were getting everything right. Because, as I say, even before these inspections, we used to go on the square and practice ourselves so that we got it right. It seems silly that, but yes, we did. And so we passed out the depot with glowing colours. But now, I didn't go through the CO's passing out parade, because something happened to me en route that I didn't have to go on the inspection. Do you want me to carry on now? I used to play rugby, I told you, for the depot. Well, one day I was sent for, I had to report to the company sergeant major and the company commander. And the company commander said, I want you to go down to the regiment that joined the 1st Battalion in Carrick, Mons Lines. Collect your kit, you're going off tomorrow. You'll be given a warrant, and no reason given whatever. So off I went and got all my kit and telling the lads I'm sent away. I thought I was being chucked out of the army, and so did they, and there was a lot of solemn faces. My pals couldn't understand, I couldn't understand it, and I was very upset about it. Other than, I wasn't really being chucked out, but I was going to the 1st Battalion. And nobody knew the reason why, because everybody went as a squad. So off the 1st Battalion, I was shot by a train, which was stationed in Mons Lines in Catterick Camp, which wasn't so very far away.
Now, when would this be?
This was in February 1933. I joined the army in September. So it was 6 months, more or less 5 months training at the depot, January, February, September, October, November, December, 6 months training at the depot, and I went back to join the 1st Battalion on my own.